You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today, I've got a special guest, a features writer for Dime, a contributor for the Basketball News, the host of multiple podcasts, and the most underpaid employee of Big Head Coffee. It's Katie Heindel. How is that coming along? I feel like I haven't gotten a Big Head Coffee update in quite some time.
I've started making my own merch on the side, so I might get sued. I might get a cease and desist, but I would like frame the cease and desist if I got it.
Does it have the Big Head logo on it, or is it like Small Head Coffee, you know, something comparable like that? So
we
know
it's Face. It's Big Face Coffee, first of all.
Is it? I don't even know anymore.
It's okay.
Big Face Coffee. Yeah, I know he's launching it, but I don't.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you know this, but I'm also like a part-time like potter on the side. I have like a small pottery business, so I've started to make mugs. So I made one for my friend Toronto Raptors beat writer Blake Murphy. I made him a Big Face Coffee mug, so I might start making these mugs and selling them. But yeah, it says, the thing is, there's no like logo. It's just that very specific font that Jimmy Butler has on like the hat and the shirts and like all his own merch. So I just tried to emulate the font. Yeah. On the mugs, and it says Big Face Coffee Mug Owner, which I thought was pretty good. And then I have his drawings from the bubble, you know, when he drew the like sizes of the cups on that whiteboard, small, medium, large, put that on the bottom of the cup depending on the size of the mug.
Now I had to ask, how would I have known that you were a part-time potter on the
I don't
show?
Know I feel like I'm just you never like you know I'm on a lot of shows. I'm not even bragging. It's just like
I think you are.
Sometimes it's too much. yeah, I'm on this show right now. No, I'm just kidding. But I do. I don't know. I can't keep track of where I say certain things, and I've definitely mentioned that on basketball shows. So I'm just checking. I don't know
that you're a part-time potter. So when did you start getting into pottery?
probably like 4 or 5 years ago. I just was like, oh, when's the last time as an adult I had a new hobby? Or like learn to do something new. And I couldn't really think about it. And that sort of depressed me. So I was like, I've always kind of wanted to try this. Actually, maybe it's like 6 years now. So anyway.
Yeah, I'm learning how to host a podcast. It's been a year. I still have no idea.
But there you go. You picked it up real quick. And it feels good.
That depends on who you ask and on any given day. Yesterday, following the discourse on Kendrick Nunn, did not work out quite so well for me. So that's a whole other story. Yeah, I don't want to take that up with you because I know. Well, we've already had that show.
Yeah, we have had that combo. Yeah. To be fair,
so
I know where I stand. Yeah.
I did want to congratulate you, I guess, on the anniversary of the Dishes and Dine podcast. It seems like
thank you.
It seems like everything's going well. I tried listening to half, I think, of the anniversary show, and unfortunately, I could not finish it. But great.
The part with Jose Calderon was kind of that's all you really needed to. The rest of it was great. A lot of banter, but man, Jose was the star.
I mean, you have, how many people do you actually have on the show? That's like 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, there's 7 of us and we rotate. But yeah, last night, we were all on, plus a former member who came back for the anniversary show. And then Jose.
That's excellent. Good stuff.
What a nice man.
What, he is affiliated with a team, correct?
No longer. No. He just always is in a loose way. And like, that's what I learned. He like has a property in Toronto and he's like back all the time. So I think it's just, and he did like when this last season, when the season was still going, he would be there all the time. And
I thought he was an executive at some point, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Didn't he transition to the front office? I could have sworn.
He took a job, like he was a special assistant to Michelle Roberts last season.
That's
with the
what
NBPA.
It was.
Yeah. And it was interesting to hear him say, he was like, you know, I could have been a third string point guard again for another team for a really long time. He's like, people still wanted me on their teams. He's like, but I wanted a new job. So I did this job. I just thought that was very cool.
Yeah. No, he's I've never had a chance to actually talk to him. I did talk to him at when he was with Cleveland towards the end there, and that was an interesting guy.
Kind man. Yeah.
So what's going on with the Toronto Raptors? We're talking now on Thursday in between games one and two of this two-game series, and I'm not sure if the Raptors have figured it out. And I spoke to, I'm not sure if your co-host is exactly right, but Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, and we previewed the series and we talked about whether or not the teams had turned a corner, both teams, because both teams have been struggling. And then in game one of the set, Miami looked pretty good overall. Toronto did not, particularly in the fourth quarter. What is going on with them? And Sean alluded to the stress of being in Tampa, and then, of course, the center position being somewhat topsy-turvy. I mean, do you have any particular differing insight or views as to what's going on with Raptors?
I mean, I wrote a pretty extensive kind of top-down. I tried to be as clinical as I could, too, for this Four Basketball News a couple weeks ago, maybe. But it was basically just like, to me, when I trace the problems that the Raptors are having now, it's like almost... It's like started definitely in free agency. I think there was no expectation that Mark Gasol and Serge Ibaka would both leave. I honestly think that threw the team for a loop, and then they kind of scrambled to replace them just with sheer size, because it hasn't really worked.
I mean, I don't want to cut you off here, but I'm curious, because we went through something like this in Miami with, with Dwayne in 2016 when he left to Chicago. But how does it catch the front office by surprise? Because I feel like now this is two consecutive years between Kawhi, you know, Gasol and Ibaka. I mean, is something going on there where those lines of communication aren't perhaps as open as you might expect them to be?
I mean, perhaps. Like, I get a lot of flack when I bring this up from Raptors fans, mostly because they're nervous, but like Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster both have not signed their contract extensions, right? And they were looking to shore those up before the team even went to Tampa. And I think right before the team went to Tampa, the reasoning was, oh, we obviously have this huge undertaking of, you know, relocating the team. We'll deal with that once everybody's settled. But like, you know, they're settled. They've been there. So I think that it's safe to say there's definitely something more to it. I don't think like you need to be inside the organization and have like secret intel to tell that, in my opinion. Just because like, one, everything was targeted towards the Giannis like sweepstakes. You don't get him. You kind of scramble.
We're there too. Don't worry about it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So like that was strange to me, because it was like, this is weird. Like, this is not a team that's ever kind of put all their eggs in one basket and then just like had the blinders on to it and like didn't. I'm sure there was some semblance of a backup plan, but like clearly Baines and Alex Len are not it, because it's not working. So
well, half
that's
of them
why
are gone, right? So
yeah. So that's why I think they thought they would hang on to either Serge or Mark. And they hung on to neither, because the priorities were to not have them sign to a 2-year contract, either of them, because they wanted to save room for Giannis. I don't know. Assumptively, if he came. So I think that there's some confusion there. I don't know who's like necessarily calling the shots. I have heard from someone who, I guess, with knowledge that like it, I don't know, I hope this is, I guess I'm just breaking this now, but that like there, Bobby Webster did have some concerns about, like, he was surprised with how that Serge Ibaka trade went down. He didn't like how it was handled or something like that, which I was like, okay, this is telling, because does this mean he's not 100% calling the shots? And what does that say about the lines of communication? And I mean, in the story I wrote, I did talk about just like the lack of visibility of Webster and Ujiri. Like, the two of them were so visible in the bubble. They made it a point to be there. They made it a point to just like be around and engaged. And they are like a front office who, when games were still when fans were still in games, rather, you just see them like walking around or lurking in the stands and watching. Like, they were not, this just kind of was part of the culture, and they've been largely absent this season. So I think you don't need to like be panicky about it, but I do think it is weird. It's a very weird time to be like, okay, we're going to be covert and go behind the scenes, especially when the franchise seems to be, you know, really in the mud, like stuck in the mud, you know? So I think it's like probably not the time to do that. Maybe they're trying to buckle down and solve this problem. You clear Len, so I assume you're trying to look for someone else to bring in. But like, I don't know. It just the rhythm and like the cadence and just like kind of the culture of the team just seems very off to me. Even from in the bubble when it was off for a lot of teams, but they still largely seemed like themselves. This year's Raptors, and I'm not even like factoring in the relocation into it because I kind of side with Lau. Like I was a bit on Woodley's side when he's, you know, what you guys talked about is it being difficult for them. I sort of thought that, but then Kyle Lowry was like, you know what, this is our jobs and we agreed to this. We agreed to relocate. That's part of our jobs. We're here. Like we can't rely on that as like,
but, I mean, what else is he going to say? Right. I mean, that's just,
yeah. But like Lowry's also, he's always been the standard. Like he'll set the tone and set the standard for like how the team is and like what the dynamic is and the culture. And largely like Fred VanVleet, you know, Pascal Siakam, OG Norm, like all these kind of core culture guys, they go by that. And I don't mean it's like he's like cracking the whip and they don't agree to it. I think everyone is very happy to like let Lowry take that step. But you know, the initial, like there's all the stuff with Pascal Siakam, well, his performance on the court, and then like when he got when they like reprimanded him for like leaving the court and they sat him a game, I wondered if there was more to that. I just think there's more than what we're seeing, and I don't know that now it's like, you know, you're almost over a month into the season, I don't think you can use the relocation really as a reason anymore. Like you've relocated and I know it sucks. You do kind of have to take on the stance, as you said, of like, well, we're here now. We got to deal with it. But you do, because they're not coming back to Canada anytime soon.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I understand why that would be difficult, but I don't even think it's difficult for the players. Like this is not... This is not relocating like I'd have to relocate to another city and then just like, you know, on the fly, find an apartment or anything like that. I mean, they have staff people who have helped this process out. And by and large, they're mostly pretty wealthy. And it's not to say that we should just take advantage of them because they have that wealth, but it's a little bit easier for them. I can imagine it's being most difficult for those players with families that are somewhat uprooted. So,
I mean, I will say at first it did sound weird because when they were all looking for, it didn't sound like every guy had like an agent or someone helping him look, like, or a realtor. And it also sounded like they were all just looking at the same places. Like OG Anunoby said that.
I know we're probably like getting too deep into the woods here, but this seems like a great story, right? Like the real estate agent to the Stars or the NBA, you know, it's like they should have somebody that's like, yeah, oh, I know. Like, you know, an NBAapartmentfinder.com or something like that.
They probably should. And also because it's like, then I was like, how, I guess there's not that many vacant properties in Tampa of a certain like size and style. If they were all looking at the same ones.
That's fair. I don't know the Tampa real estate market myself. I can imagine like you're probably trying to find something like most players do a couple, you know, a mile or less away from the arena. I mean, maybe there's not a lot of options. I don't know even where the arena is located. So it might be like in a, not a great
downtown because they were staying in the hotel. There's like a Marriott attached to it, and that's where they had all been staying when they arrived. But I mean, it's all I was gonna say was that by now a lot of them have found places, more permanent places to live than a hotel. So that is more towards my leaning with Kyle Lowry, which is like, you know, at some point you just gotta buckle down and be like, yeah, maybe I don't want to be here, but like this is where we are.
Turning point for the franchise, and maybe that seems too dire, but I mean, considering what you just mentioned about the Giannis sweepstakes and the eggs in the baskets and things of that sort. Although my former co-host once referred to them as putting all your dominoes in the basket, I think he mixed metaphors there. It was a hilarious Locked On Heat moment. You know, it just feels,
I mean, Jimmy
like
Butler might kick like custom dominoes, or I could see that.
This was before Jimmy was even a bleep on the radar for Heat fan. Okay. But I just feel like, you know, these turning points happen throughout every franchise's history. And right now you're like focusing on, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo coming in and theoretically being the guy who helps carry the franchise forward as, you know, Kyle eventually ages out, as other players leave, you know, as things transition and change. And then all of a sudden that plan kind of falls apart and you're left still in a fairly good place. You've obviously got some good young players there and Kyle. So, I mean, does it feel like a turning point? Could it all turn around this season and all of this is for nothing? I don't know. Your perspective is a lot more nuanced.
I mean, it could. Like, theoretically, I'm like, it could for every team. Like, you never know to that end. But yeah, I think, like, what I think is sort of weird about it is this season feels to me like this last, like what people anticipated last season to look like this kind of gigantic falling off of the team. Whereas last season, the beginning of the season, those Raptors were amazing.
Yeah,
completely. And I think there was a real drive and like grit and like effort to kind of just like bear down and like do, they still largely felt like themselves. They were like, yeah, we lost Kawhi, but it wasn't everything. And they showed pretty quickly they were able to be resilient and figure it out. Right. It didn't really work for them through the bubble. And I think that's just like, it was a long season.
Yeah.
So I think to me, this season almost feels like what last season was supposed to be for a lot of people, but it feels worse that it's this season because of like all the aforementioned reasons that we just talked about, of like kind of what is happening to the team. So it's also a weird position because it's like, they're not so bad. They're not bad enough to like blow up, you know, if you want to talk about a rebuild. They're not really there yet.
Not according to Kevin O'Connor, right? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, they're playing very badly, but you still have like these core pieces that the front office has invested in and has like made it a point to say like, these are our future franchise leaders. I've kind of come to the painful realization that no matter, as long as Kyle Lowry is on the team, and I'm like, I say this as a person who I'm like, I want him on the team forever, but as long as he is on the team, it's always going to be a Kyle Lowry team. So if you really want to kind of move the team to the next level of like what the look and feel and kind of next gen Raptors are, if you want to have like Siakam and Van Vliet and Anunoby and those guys lead, you kind of can't have Lowry there anymore, because he will never be like, they will never like fully step into that leadership role, because why would they? Like, you've got the kind of like the perfect leader for everything.
He's that much of a culture setter for the
players. There, yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's a sense of like, does the team go to Lowry and say like, give us your top three destinations? Because there's also a lot of teams that could use Lowry right now. And yeah. I think if you're just like, I hate talking like this, but if you're just coldly looking at this as like a trade scenario, he could get you some things. So then you want to be like amenable to him. You're not going to just like trade him away, you know, or just let his contract run out. I would hope you would do the right thing and invest in this man who has basically like been the face of the franchise, and probably he's like the best Raptor of all time. You want to do right by that guy. So you want to say like, where would you like to go? And a lot of those places, if whether that's like Philly or the Lakers or the Clippers, like
Miami
or Miami, a lot of those places have players that the Raptors could use, even if it's like stylistically kind of players, you know? So I guess that makes sense. I don't like it, but it does make sense. But I do think, like, just to go back to your point, like, this is a transitional year, but the problem is I don't think the Raptors know where they're going. So how do you transition to just like, you can't just transition into more ambiguity. You need to kind of have a sense of like, you know what, if this year doesn't work, this is actually what we're going to do. And maybe they do know that, but now just this, it feels like this weird period of stalling. And that feels strange for this team.
Well, how would you react to a trade of Kyle Lowry? Because it just feels like,
break my heart.
Yeah,
okay. It would suck. Yeah. But like, a part of me is also like, this is not like, I don't want to see him. Like, if he signs on for a few more years and they make some changes and get, and I don't know, somehow like attract someone in free agency to like revitalize things a little bit, and he just like, he chooses to say great. But I only, like, I kind of just want him, I want him to do what would make him happiest, especially if he's like looking at like the last portion of his career.
Could he transition into like the Udonis role, which has become pretty divisive here in South Florida? I mean, somebody brought up a good point to me, which is, you know, every time Udonis re-signs, to me, because he's been with the team for so long and I personally like him and like talking to him and everything else, I understand that he is a culture setter himself, although he's just not one that plays as often as Kyle does. He does not make the same impact on the floor as Kyle Lowry does, but his presence to me still feels like a necessary one. And then somebody else brought up to a point to me that says, you know, he's taking up a roster spot for somebody, given that there are so few opportunities to break into the league where you have these guys who have these incredible opportunities, like a Chris Boucher or something like that, you know? And so to have Haslam at 41 years old, taking up that spot is probably not in the best interest of, you know, infusing the league with new young players, especially when he's not really doing anything. He's not going to play. He's not going to play anytime soon. He's basically a coach in sneakers. So can Lowry become something like that? Like, I mean, he's just too good right now, and I don't think he's old enough yet where he's even contemplating that, but could he ever transition to a guy where he's on the end of the bench and he's just there as more of a figurehead than anything else?
I don't know. It would feel very bizarre to me to watch that Lowry. And I think for him, it's just like, he's such a competitor. I think he just would feel like he wasn't pulling his weight, honestly, if he was just there. Like, he's not just the one, like a one-dimensional player ever. So I don't know that he could just transition to being like kind of a locker room vet and like a presence in that way, you know? And so it's a good question, but I guess, no, I don't think so. I don't think he could just have a role like that, because I don't think it would be very satisfying for him.
Well, you know, he's had such a great career where he's run through the gamut of different, you know, roles, where he was just a role player and there were great expectations. He was trade, you know, fodder, as much as I hate to use that terminology, but he was just moved around and he couldn't establish himself anywhere until really Toronto. And that he ascended into stardom while he was there is one thing, but I feel like he's grounded enough to the point where he knows how flimsy all of this is, that I could see the potential there. I understand your perspective on the competitiveness. And not to say that a 40 or 38 year old player isn't competitive. They're just not able to do the same things on the floor that they once did. The idea of players and aging in the NBA is one that's long fascinated me. So to see Lowry be able to change his approach and just say, no, I'm content being here with my basketball family, to see them, even if I'm not on the court as often and making the same impact I once did. But let's move on a little bit to the other team that we are facing on Friday, which is the Miami Heat. I don't know how much you've seen of them this year. I've got in my notes, and kind of like taking what you said about Toronto and kind of extrapolating it further, but a shitty season, because to me, it just feels like this season has been difficult to watch from, you know, to cover the Heat, to cover the Raptors, to cover so many teams, because there's just so much changing from COVID to players injuring. And it's just, there's so much piling up. And of course, everything that's happening outside in the real world. And it's just, it's been less enjoyable for me on a personal level. Do you feel any of that yourself too?
Oh yeah. I definitely feel like a distance. I knew I would feel a little bit trepidatious going into the season, just when they bumped it up to December. It was kind of like, what's the rush? So I understand the rush is making money, but
billions of dollars.
So I get it, though that made me feel pretty gross. And then I think just with what we've seen so far, especially recently with all of the COVID cases spiking and the leagues, like, I just don't understand how they could have kind of fallen behind from the leaders that they were when COVID first like hit, you know what I mean? Hit North America, to like where they are now, especially when they've watched other pro leagues go through this. So it's like the data is all there. And like, I don't know how you didn't troubleshoot for like these kinds of scenarios. There's a lot of half measures introduced that I just don't
think. They've handled it badly, right?
They've handled it very badly, and kind of callously. Like my most recent like heartbreaking thing was when Karl Anthony Towns tested positive, and the league is just kind of like almost trying to shunt him away, like a little bit like a leper, because they're like, we're hell-bent on continuing. And like, he's been so affected by this personally, like he's lost 7 members of his family to COVID, he has it now. And it's just like, how do you reconcile that? Because he's also like a star of the NBA, right? He's like a face of the NBA. At least he was. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to his career now, because he's also been very vocal about, he's just like, I kind of just played basketball to go through the motions now. Right. This isn't the same for me, and I don't think it ever will be.
How has the league shunned him away? Because I maybe I just haven't been following as close.
I guess I just haven't seen them. I would like, it's like, I think your actions, this is a case where the actions speak louder than words, but they aren't really saying anything. I think they've just been like, yeah, we're thinking of him. But it's like, you got to show up for this guy. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to like show that you're like, he's been so impacted. I just don't understand how he could go to work, you know, and look at what the league is doing and like how he's been affected personally. And like reconcile those things. And I don't know how the league can do that either. Again, I know how they can. It's like, it's profit. The product is basketball, and they're very like, they want that to continue. But like, you're just kind of hanging this dude out to dry. You know, you're just like, you go over there and we hope you get better, but we're going to continue over here. And we have these strange half measures of like our cool down zone where guys go and sit before they go back to the bench, before they put a mask on. We have a weird like security watching guys that they're not going to hug. They only like fist bump and like elbow bump. Whereas it's like, how is that relevant if they're then going to go play 28 minutes on the floor together? Right. There's just a lot. It's like, it doesn't make sense. There's no logic to it. It's not science-based. They went very quickly from a league that was like leading in that sense to me to one that's just like, we're just going to deal with things as they come up because we're not stopping, you know? But like, look at the Heat. I was surprised by that game because I was like, where is everybody? Honestly. I have been following them, but I guess like it's been surprising to me how rapid teams have had to be like, okay, we don't have enough people to play this game.
Yeah,
games they were postponed like crazy.
There was actually a debate on that in today's presser with Eric Spoelstra because, you know, Tyler Hero has missed I think 4 games now, and he wound up playing this first game last week against the Philadelphia 76ers, right? The first game after Jimmy was out and Goran was out and Bam Adebayo was out, like half the, I think a total of 7 players were out. And so they had mm-hmm. one player available. They were, you know, that would put them over the minimum 8 players required. And it was Tyler Hero. And then he wound up having a neck injury and aggravating at that game. And so he's missed the last 4 games. And so in hindsight, he probably should have sat out that game, which was a meaningless loss anyway. But you know, that's what's the reality of what's going on now, is that your rosters are incomplete. So to me, like, even watching this team is so difficult to assess what they are. I just had a conversation about this an hour ago where I was like, how'd they turn a corner? I was like, well, how the hell should I know? They haven't had their full roster at any point in time, either mm-hmm. because of injury or COVID or a combination of both. We just haven't seen what this team is like. And while it's fun to get contributions from, you know, bench players that normally wouldn't get any minutes, once they bring back Jimmy, assuming he does come back to full health, you know, which is another issue. I mean, they haven't mentioned it, but he's missed now 5 games and has been out mm-hmm. for over a week and a half, I think. So does Jimmy have COVID? The team's not going to say. He's just following mm-hmm. health and safety protocols. And is there any long-term ramifications about what happens to Jimmy? So it's just been really, really chaotic.
Like, the margins are so thin too. And like, that's kind of what it is with the Raptors, and it's kind of what it is with the Heat. Like, the teams are, they have like their core kind of star slash like always like consistently productive players. And then if they kind of take a wrong step or if they're out, it's not like there's enough people to kind of come in and replace them and get the same kind of meaningful like contribution basically. So they're going to sink. I mean, this is what's happening to the Raptors. It's just like Kyle Lowry can't do everything. Pascal Siakam is cold. You know, if like, Ojan, and if like shots aren't falling, like it's just, you can't.
Well, Kyle
like,
struggled against the Heat in game 1.
Yeah. And I think that's just like, there's, it's also like, that's the Raptors classic problem is like in the last Heat game that we saw like yesterday, they could kind of hang in there, but then like, there's not enough juice left by the time the fourth rolls around. And it's kind of the same with the Heat. Like, it's just when you don't have that many players to turn to and you don't have a full healthy roster, you're playing at a deficit, and it's like, it's not sustainable basketball. So I mean, they're having very parallel problems, though I would not call them where the teams are at parallel. Like the Heat, basically what I'm trying to say is the Heat should be a lot better, but they're kind of hobbled.
Yeah. But you don't see that for Toronto. You don't think they're just going to be able to flip a switch and become much better?
No, they need to. We don't have, there's such a size deficit right now. Like, Aron Baynes can't catch a basketball. I'm shocked by this. Like, for a, like a mercenary player who's played through so many systems, I'm actually a bit surprised at his lack of versatility. Maybe it will come.
He hit a three.
And something gets by him. The only shot that he takes is also a three. Like, I don't understand. Like, yes. I miss Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka.
Less versatile than Duncan Robinson at this point, which is that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, and Robinson.
And like Boucher.
He's actually. Robinson's actually a pretty good shooter. So
he is a good shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great shooter. I was just going to say, like, Chris Boucher, size wise, like, he's like, bless him. He has stepped up in all regards, but he's just like, he's not big enough to go up against like a Bam Bio. Like, you can't ask that of him.
Although he did draw that offensive foul that was, I mean, to me, it looked like a flop. It was just weird. Like,
Bam
moved his arm a little bit and he went flying.
Bam's huge. Boucher's not that big. He's just a skinny guy.
What's his listed playing weight? Like 175 or something?
He's
like
still that? Big. I know. I'm just kidding. But he's not as big as Bam. But yeah, I think, you know, the Heat, you've got all of, like, once everybody's healthy, that's still a team that's like very competitive. They're just as competitive as they were, you know, when they went to the finals. But the Raptors are not. They need to plug some holes quickly because they're just going to continue to tank, I think.
Do you think a bubble is going to happen for the playoffs?
I don't know. I've thought about this. Maybe for the playoffs. I wondered if it could get so bad that the NBA would be like, all right, we're going to somehow suspend cross-conference play and we're just going to do a conference bubble. But I think that would be too difficult to get started. And like, it would obviously mess up a lot of scheduling.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I'm fine with it at least being implemented for the playoffs, because I think it worked so well for the play-in tournament and you kind of build up that anticipation. It's not like there's not going to be a lot of fans
in the playoffs, because like, what is the product if the NBA really is like so intent on the product? What is the product if you've got, you know, every single team that makes the playoffs operating at what, like 75% capacity because players are getting sick?
Yeah, I am in agreement. I said this at the beginning of the year. I thought that a bubble would make sense for the playoffs because, I mean, interestingly, in like sharp contrast to how I feel about this season, like, I was so juiced up for the bubble. And maybe that's because it felt like a return to somewhat normalcy, even though everything on the outside was so clearly not normal by any stretch. But at least you could focus on basketball and you had games like on a, you know, Tuesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at TNT.
So that's what I was just going to say. Like, there was no normalcy to it. It was in the weirdest place on earth, like the most like artificial, bizarre place on earth. And like, yeah, it felt like weirdest, like summer camp stasis period. It's like any time of the day you could turn on TV and there's a basketball game. I mean, I loved it. I definitely like dug into it. And I think, yeah, it felt, I don't know, it was a very weird time in the world, as it still is, but like, at least they had made an effort to kind of handle things, you know what I mean? And it felt somewhat responsible. And players at least seemed, you know, pretty okay with it at the beginning. We've now learned that they were like, it was a really long time to be there. And I don't know that I would do it for that long again, but yeah, like the bubble, I enjoyed that basketball. It was also interesting, like kind of anomaly yes. basketball at times, right? Like, which I think it was good. Like, if you want to talk about the product, like that was very good and very competitive basketball. I think every game
hasn't been this year. Yeah, this year I feel like the 50-point blowouts seem like the norm now.
Exactly. Like, nobody's playing defense. You're like, oh, the score is 140 to like, you know, 135. How did this happen?
Yeah. Made their plans public to allow fans back into the arena starting next Thursday. So this is my own little bit of news here. But anyway, they're bringing fans back, starting a game against the Clippers next Thursday, a week from today. And it's about 1,500 fans, what they're calling phase one. And I'm not sure if you've heard about what's going on, because I know you've been following that. It was taking place in Tampa. Then when there were outbreaks around the state and within the NBA, they canceled that process, which is the smart thing to do. Miami going the other way and saying, no, now we're ready to move forward with fans. And part of their protocols is that they're going to have COVID sniffing dogs.
Oh, I did hear about this.
Well, I don't know if it's reliable. The Heat PR team made it seem like it was like a 90% success rate or accuracy rate. And I mean, that's just,
well, what Nordic country is this happening in? It's happening. They're taking a model. They're adopting a model that has been used and has actually proven successful. It's not like they just made this up.
Okay.
Being
used. I had not heard that. So I'm going to have to research.
Like I'm just reaching to Nordic countries, but I'm like, maybe it's Denmark, but it is a country that is trying this. I'm going to Google it really quickly.
This is great. Great radio right here. I mean,
sorry.
No. I love it. I'm looking for it.
Finland. There we go. Oh. Finland was the one who launched the pilot project for this. And they said it's been extremely positive. They've had success with it. They're doing it at the airport. I guess I'm heartened because they're trying something, but a part of me is also just like, it doesn't make sense to have fans at games at all, anywhere. And this to me is a lack of leadership again from the NBA, because what are they going to do? They're letting fans come in the arena. People, I guess, are distanced and have to wear masks, but then they're still like, you got to sit 30 feet back from the court. So they understand the implications, you know. If they trusted that everyone coming in was like not asymptomatic, for example, then they'd let people sit close to the court, but they're not doing that. So it's kind of like, okay, like how long are we going to pretend that like this works?
Yeah, this feels like a broader scale now thinking about it, of like when you hear of like players like LeBron not paying for you know, a data plan or anything like that. It's like, dude, your net worth is close to 100, you know, I don't know what at this point, but you're almost a billionaire. So, you know, can you not spend an extra $20 a month on a data plan? Because it feels like the NBA, a multi-billion-dollar organization with a global reach, is like scrounging for pennies, allowing 1,000 fans to buy a slice of pizza out in the concourse.
Yeah, exactly. How much is that going to net? Gonna net them,
right? Because you have to pay staff too, and you have to have like more to allow all these fans, and of course you're paying for the dog sniffing services. I mean, like what is the end game here? How much money are you really making? And like the players are all going to say, much like Kyle Lowry, it's like, yeah, we love the fan experience. It's like, no, you don't. You spent 3 months in the bubble telling us it didn't really matter, you were just going to play regardless of whether there were people in the stands or not. So it's just, it feels so weird to say, no, we're pivoting, we're gonna have fans in here, and we as NBA players love it.
Mm-hmm. I talked to an epidemiologist recently for something I'm working on about this, and they just kind of had like the sort of baseline fact that I feel like I'm going to refer to from now on when you hear about any half measure, is that they were like, you know, you have to look at, it's not necessarily what the NBA is doing to protect players. It's like, you have to look at how their action or inaction is going to affect the communities where these teams are based. So it's like, if you allow fans in and someone is positive, you know, they slip through the sniffer dogs to no fault of their own, if you're like asymptomatic, you know, then you have like how many potential infections, and then you are damaging the community. So that, I think it's irresponsible.
Absolutely. Well, I was
going to
ask. We're
so dark. Yeah.
I was going to ask you about the Eastern Conference standings and whether or not you feel like the Brooklyn Nets are the strength of the East right now, but it doesn't really feel appropriate to talk about them anymore. I guess I'll invite you onto the show at a later date, unless you have any really pressing thoughts on the Nets. Do you like them? Are you buoyed by what you see from them so far, even though they did lose in a double overtime game to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are surprisingly good? The Heat are, you know, after they finish game two against the Raptors on Friday, they'll be moving on to a two-game set against the Nets, so it should be interesting.
The Nets are kind of like, well, their big Achilles heel that isn't even really a secret is they don't have any defense. So I guess if the Heat can lock in on that, then they're probably going to be set.
No, but it's like Miami just doesn't even have that kind of scoring. They're solid as far as shooting is concerned, but it's not like they have a really lethal. I mean, they don't have anybody like Colin Sexton who's going to put up 40 something points.
Yeah, it's like, how do you get ahead of just pure shooting? Because that's kind of what the Nets MO is right now, right? And why wouldn't it be? You got Kevin Durant and James Harden. So I don't know. I think they're interesting. They're an interesting team. I'm kind of curious to see what happens. Yeah, I think they're definitely coming out of the East if things sort of go according to plan, but also like maybe it'll take some time to gel, as it always can. The one positive thing I'll try and end on is I think the East is really interesting. I think like the Cavs are like now maybe the most likable team in the Eastern Conference, strangely. Like that trade did wonders for them. I don't know, the Sixers, the Bucks, like the Celtics, these are just like, it's early days. It feels, everything weirdly to me still feels like, and I have to keep telling myself this, it's just like, it's just been a month, but like everything feels kind of set in stone right now, but it's not, especially with the way things are moving. So I think there's hope. I will say there's certainly hope for the Heat. I hope there's hope for the Raptors, but we'll see.
Well, I was just looking at it right now, the standings. I think 3.5 games separate the one seed from the 13 seed in the
East.
So there's still a chance.
There's a lot of room. There is a lot of room.
Well, before I let you go, first and foremost, thank you as always for taking the time to be on the show. But please share with my listeners where they can follow you and your excellent work, and be feel free to plug anything that you're working on or have worked on recently.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter.
Twisting your arm to plug your work there. I mean,
I'm not very good at this, but yeah, you can find me on Twitter at whatevs, WTEVS. I will plug, I'm doing a lot of stuff, but I will plug predominantly. I have a new NBA advice column at Dime, and I would love to get more questions for it. It's called Not Bad Advice. The acronym is NBA. You can ask me questions about your, you know, like the metaphysical struggles of your superstar, what's going on with your team. Someone asked me about like, what is fandom? So it's like a good, it can be pure basketball. It can be life stuff. It can be a mix, whatever you want, but you can email questions to annlandryfields@gmail.com. That's A-N-N. And then Landryfields, of course, like the Raptors legend.
See, I still think of him as a Knicks legend, but either way, legendary
legend.
Nonetheless.
How about that?
Yeah. Let's make that abundantly clear. Well, that's great. I've read some of it and it's been great. I did not catch that that other question there about what is fandom. That sounds like an interesting debate. How did you, well, I guess, you know what? I'll go and read it, as all of you should be doing. You should always be reading anything that Katie produces. She's one of the best out there. So make sure you follow her and her amazing work. Listen to all her podcasts. There's so many of them. And again, thank you, Katie, for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you for having me.